Well, this is both the way to have church and the way to sing. Thank you, Stephen. Yeah. I woke up this morning at 3:30. Now, I don't normally wake up that early, and it wasn't a problem because I felt Spirit was waking me, and I had a really interesting thought that I can't say that I've ever had in this way before. The thought was this, and it had to do with my speaking here this morning. The thought was, if I were to die tonight, what would be the message, the kernel that I would want to communicate, that I feel God would most want me to communicate to you, if this was your only experience of the particular expression of God that I bring to the world? And that thought alone changed everything, because I had intended on particularly, you know, giving one presentation, and now I'm going to be giving another one. I think I'd like to start by saying that one of the things that I found most meaningful about this morning's singing, the worship, the celebration, is the theme that we keep coming back to of gratitude, and that we co-create our experience of the world through our conversations with ourselves and each other. And if we choose to focus on what we can be grateful for, because there's always going to be, I imagine it like this, there's always at least 50 things that we can find fault with. There's always 50 things we can complain about if we really look hard. And there's always at least 50 things that we can be grateful for. And so why not choose the things that we can be grateful for, especially when they make us feel so much better? Now, of course, some of us have exercised that other muscle, the muscle of finding what's wrong here, but that's okay. We can let that be. In fact, we can be grateful for the fact that we've got that skill down. All right. So let's exercise that other muscle a little more often. And one of the reasons that I love these beads is that I have 269 of the major transformational moments in the history of the universe represented in beads. Each bead signifies a significant event in the universe story, a grace moment in the history of life, the history of the universe. And mind you, all the grace moments don't necessarily feel good at the time. One of the things that I have represented here are the major catastrophes, the major extinctions, the major violent, chaotic, destructive episodes in Earth's history. Because one of the things that we know about life is that, let's put it this way, compost happens. You know, sometimes we're just dealt a lousy hand. Sometimes things just occur that we wished were not the case, that don't feel good to us, that we can sometimes find ourselves frustrated about, and yet, if we can say yes to life on life's terms, not on our terms, we truly are having faith in God. Faith in God, trusting the universe, accepting what is, loving what's so, all of those are different ways of saying basically the same thing. They're basically saying, whatever life is giving you in the moment and whatever life has given you in the past, you can be transformed if you choose to find something about that that you can be grateful for, rather than focusing on what about that you could complain about or find fault with. Both choices are there. Both options are there. And the other thing that I'm reminded by in terms of my what I call great story beads, my cosmic rosary, I grew up Roman Catholic. You can't get the Catholic out of me, right? But one of the things that we recognize is that there is so much that we now know. See, we're moving beyond beliefs to knowledge. And when you know something, you don't have to believe in it. It's like we don't believe in the universe. We're an expression of the universe. We're part of the universe. And we no longer even need to believe that God created the world or how God created the world. We now know in the last 200 years, there have been five major things. And there's all kinds of scientific discoveries. In fact, I got a lot of them represented here, including the major life transformations in my own personal life story. Right? But there's five major things that we've only learned in the last 200 years, you could say there's five major things that God has revealed to us in the last 200 years that Moses couldn't have known about. The Apostle Paul couldn't have known about. Martin Luther couldn't have known about. Notice, none of the great sages or saints or theologians or philosophers in the past could have possibly known what we now today know. Moses could only believe that God created the world. So we have stories in all over the world of different mythic stories. We're moving from myth, where all we could have was mythic stories of how God, you know, one culture talks about God speaking the world into existence. Another culture talks about God sculpting the world into existence. There's actually a tribe in Africa that talks about, they use the metaphor of, you know, how termites will eat clay and then they come to the surface and poop out the clay, and that's how a termite mound is created. So they talk about God pooping the world into existence. Right. Now, frankly, that explains an awful lot, I think. But my point is this. There are hundreds of creation myths all over the world. And all of them are stories that are meaningful, that are inspiring for the people that hold that particular story as sacred. And yet none of them are knowledge-based. None of them are measurably true. They're meaningfully true. They're not measurably true. And so what we've discovered, these five things, very briefly. One is extinctions. 200 years ago was the first time that anybody proposed even the possibility that there are species that used to be here that aren't here now. Not just individuals, but whole species. George Cuvier in 1798 proposed, he saw these mammoth and mastodon teeth and bones, and he said, you know, these are elephant-like, but there's no elephants alive today that have teeth like this or tusks like this. And even Thomas Jefferson, a great naturalist, in 1804, he said, no, George Cuvier is wrong. These must exist. God or nature couldn't have possibly produced something so imperfect as to go extinct. He couldn't handle the concept of extinction. In fact, a lot of people don't know this, but the Lewis and Clark expedition, he sold it to Congress as a way of trying to find a passage through to the West, right? He took George Cuvier, I mean, he took Meriwether Lewis aside and said, he said, Meriwether, I want to prove George Cuvier wrong. I want you to find me some mammoths and mastodons out there. Right? Well, a lot of people don't know this. It wasn't until the 1830s that we started having, in 1840s, that we started having incontrovertible proof. We had dinosaur bones, huge dinosaurs, and it was obvious, these suckers don't live today. They're nowhere on the earth. They don't exist. And of course, now, we've got so much abundant evidence, there's not a paleontologist in the world that would debate or deny the fact that at least 95%, maybe more, of the species that have ever existed in Earth's history are no longer alive. What Charles Darwin gave us 50 years later was an understanding that if it weren't for the death of species, there could be no complex life. In fact, the way I sometimes think about it is if it weren't for the death of species, there would be nothing on Earth more complex than pond scum. Now, I just want to be on official record here. I've got nothing against pond scum. You know, I mean, pond scum's good stuff. But it's pretty boring world compared to the world that we actually find ourselves in now. In other words, what I'm saying is that if you don't understand extinctions, you can't understand how God created complex life. 120 years ago, we learned about glaciers, these huge ice sheets, sometimes a mile deep, that have slowly come down and slowly gone back. In fact, 17 times in North America in the last 2.5 million years, the glaciers have come south, and the glaciers have gone back. And of course, as they come south, they do tremendous damage. They destroy things. But then as they go back, they leave in their wake lakes. Did you ever wonder why in the United States, like 98% of all the lakes are in the north? The only lakes that are in the south are dammed up reservoirs. It's because you can't understand how God created lakes, including the Great Lakes, if you don't understand glaciers and healthy soils. What it leaves in its wake, because these huge ice, it pounds, it crushes rock. And so we have healthy soils. Australia has horrible soil because they didn't have glaciers. So you can't understand how God created lakes and healthy soils if you don't understand glaciers. Only 45 years ago, we started to have the understanding of plate tectonics, that Earth's crust moves around on these plates. And this was proposed in the 1920s, but it was only in 1966 that we had proof, because basically what happened is we had the instrumentation and we could measure that that right smack down the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, the crust is separating. In fact, the Atlantic Ocean is growing. This is a great cocktail party thing you can tell somebody about. The Atlantic Ocean is growing at the same rate your fingernails grow or your hairs grow. And the Pacific Ocean is shrinking at that rate. You can't understand how God created mountains. For example, the Himalayan mountains are because the Indian plate is cramming into the Asian plate. And that's what's causing... You can't understand how God created mountains, oceans, or continents if you don't understand plate tectonics. Moses couldn't have known that. The Apostle Paul couldn't have known that. And these are revelations. If you think... Now, I realize I'm preaching to the choir here, but this is news to many of your neighbors. If you think that God revealed all the cool, important stuff back when people believed the world was flat and religious insights were recorded on animal skins, when the most, you know, advanced forms of word processing were scratches on animal skins put in clay pots, you're missing what God's been revealing. God speaks to us through the facts of our experience, but also God speaks to us collectively through evidence. God is speaking today as clearly and as powerfully as ever before. And now God is not just speaking personally to individuals, God is speaking collectively to our species. The worldwide self-correcting scientific enterprise is God speaking. Every fact discovered by science is God speaking a word of truth about the nature of reality. And we are learning. In fact, the biblical writers... they knew less than this amount. In the entire time, from the oldest documents to the newest documents, they knew only this much or less. You can't understand the grace of God if you don't understand this stuff as grace too. All these transformations tell us they're windows into the nature of the Creator. My point is this. There's so much we can be grateful for. And not just the happy stuff. Not just the good stuff. As I said before, the chaos, the catastrophes, the extinctions that have occurred in Earth's history. One of the things we know, we don't believe, is that the primary thing that has catalyzed and furthered creativity for billions of years is chaos, breakdowns, and bad news. And so there's an exercise. If I had one message that I wanted to communicate, if I were to die tonight, what would be the message I'd like to communicate? It would be this. Not only to be present to the blessings, to the things that we can be grateful for, to the blessings in our own life, but where you can be, in some cases, a life-changing blessing to someone else. And it's really, really simple. It's simply one, being aware that, as we've been singing about, we are an expression of life. The universe has been expanding for 14 billion years, and then in us, in humans, the universe became complex enough that it could begin to contemplate its own nature. Humans are literally the universe becoming aware of itself. We're nature uncovering its own nature. We don't believe this. We know this. The universe has been expanding for billions of years, and then in us, it became in this solar system, it became complex enough that it could begin to contemplate its own nature. We're nature uncovering its own nature. A human being looking through a telescope is the universe looking at itself and just going, whoa. A biology student looking through a microscope is the planet Earth learning with awareness, with consciousness, how it's functioned unconsciously and instinctually for billions of years. Because we're also the Earth becoming conscious of itself. In fact, two of my favorite quotes from Brian Swim, he's a cosmologist. He's got these two great quotes that just help people sort of just get this. He says, 4 billion years ago, the Earth was molten rock, and now it sings opera. Right? Earth was once molten rock, now it sings opera. Right? Here's another one of Brian's quotes. Now, I love this one. He tries to take the entire 14 billion year history of the universe and sum it up in two sentences. A little audacious, but I think you'll like it. He says, you take a great cloud of hydrogen gas and you just leave it alone. And it becomes rose bushes, giraffes, and human beings. Now, see, this whole process is divine. This is not just a secular, meaningless process. This whole process is divine. That is, it's a holy endeavor. And again, we're part of that. So one of the ways that we can be a blessing to others is simply to own and be aware of the fact that we're an expression of grace. And when we focus on what we can be grateful for, and especially when we tell that to someone, we can be a huge blessing to others. So there's a story that I actually haven't told. I told it first service, but prior to that, I haven't told this story in years. But this is what I was reminded of this morning. And it has to do with expressing gratitude to someone who's not expecting it and yet deserves it. And I need to say this. There are many people in your life that have been a blessing to you, not because their impact on you has been 100% positive. I mean, think about it. Haven't there been people who have made a significant difference in your life because of their lousy example? In other words, they were a real jerk, and you made some positive choice in your life as a result of that. Now, do you really think that you haven't been blessing other people the same way? So again, it's not holding others to a standard that we don't hold ourselves, right? So I'm not talking about people that have been perfect blessings in your life, where there hasn't been some pain or challenge or difficulty. I'm saying you can even find things about that that you can be grateful for. And here's the story. About 22, 23 years ago, I listened to a teaching. Actually, I watched a teaching. It was on videotape of an evangelical minister who was talking about the power, the life-changing power of simply expressing gratitude. And he encouraged people to find people in their life, just pray about different people in their life who deserve to be thanked, and then actually take the time to in some way thank them, either written form or in person or whatever. And so there was this woman who worked for a newspaper. And her boss, who had been at the newspaper for some 40 years or something, she had worked for him for 8 or 9 years, she realized that she'd never thanked him. So she decided on Monday, because the teaching was on Sunday, she heard the sermon. So she decided to go in and she was going to thank her boss. Now, this is a real gruff, curmudgeonly kind of guy, right? Not sort of your warm, fuzzy kind of guy. And so she walked in and she asked if she could just speak with him for a few minutes. And he said, all right, go for it. And so she launched into both in generalities, but also in specifics. There was this time that you did this and this and this. And she thanked him for about 7 or 8 minutes. She started thanking him, the fact that he was a fair man, that he's paid her well. And she went on to thank him for all these different kinds of things over the years. And, of course, in the back of his mind, I'm being buttered up for something. And so he listens to this sort of with a, you know, sort of a skeptical sort of sense. And then she's done, and he says, all right. And she simply said, that's all. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate you. And here's why. And she turned around and left. Well, he sat there in sort of stunned silence for a couple minutes. And then he went out to her cubicle and got her and asked her, said, can I please speak you back to my office? But she noticed there was a shaking in his voice. And so they went back in the office. He closed the door. He sat down at the desk. And by this time, his voice was really shaking. And he said, all he could say was this. And then he stopped talking. He said, I've been here for 40 years. I've never had anybody do that. He said, in some weird way, you've just validated what I've been doing for 40 years. And he started getting choked up. He stopped talking. And that was it. And she left. Well, I was touched by that story, and I thought to myself, okay, who are the people in my life who I have not thanked that really deserve it? Well, obviously, my parents came up first. There were others as well. So I wrote letters. I wrote a 17-page letter to my father I started with the earliest memory. He was carrying me on his shoulders. We went to a ball game. I was 4 years old in New York City. And I thanked him for that. And I just went through, and every memory that I had never thanked him for, and some maybe that I had, but I had forgotten. And so I thanked him for some general things and also thanked him for specific memories. And like I say, it took 17 pages. And I had, what I didn't know, what I had not anticipated, was the fact that I would cry. This letter was bathed in my tears. I must have wept for 45 minutes writing this letter. And I found out later that it had the same effect on my father when he read it. Now, my father and I had a close relationship. I'm not going to say that we didn't. Something shifted, and it's never been the same. That was 23 years ago. It's been just deeper. It's been more precious. 6 or 7 years later, I'm at the seminary. I'm studying to become a minister. I'm at the seminary, and I happen to be talking to the business manager, who's this sort of rather hardcore woman. And, again, not the kind you'd walk up and hug. And we got onto the topic of gratitude somehow, and I told her the story of this woman, and I told her the story of my father. And I didn't think anything of it. And like 3 days later, I'm walking into the seminary, and she hears me say hi to the person. She's, Michael, come here, come in my office. I'm thinking, what's this about? Because I had forgotten I told her. She shut the door. She said, sit down. Well, you know, all right, what'd I do? She said, remember that story you told me about this woman at the newspaper? Yeah. Remember the story about your father? Yeah. She said, well, I got inspired, and I've been married for 42 years, and I just wrote my husband a letter, and I sent it to him in his office. It was 12 pages typewritten single space. She said, I sent it to his office. She said, he called me 20 minutes ago. He said, I haven't heard my husband cry in 25 years. He was in tears. She said, thank you for that story. I share this with you simply because we so often don't think about one simple way that we can often be a life-changing blessing. This man, 40 years, had never had anybody thank him, and even though he was gruff and curmudgeonly, he was a fair guy. And nobody had ever moved through the crust of his personality to get to the heart of the man and thank him. There are teachers in your life. Elementary teachers, high school teachers, college teachers, graduate school teachers. There are people in your life, family members, close family members, not so close family members, but people who've made a difference in your life, neighbors. And I challenge you to just take one of them. Because here's what I know. If you do this, it's going to be so powerful for you, you'll want to do it with others as well. And if all you did in terms of a spiritual practice was to not just focus on the things that you can be grateful for, but specifically how can you be a blessing by telling someone about it and simply expressing in an email, a letter, a hand letter, you know, a phone call, in person, whatever. And here's the thing. Again, as I said before, they don't have to be 100% of a blessing in your life. There could be some challenges. But if you focus just on the thing or things that you're grateful for and just leave aside that other stuff, it breaks the heart open. There's compassion, there's forgiveness, there's generosity, there's all kinds of magical stuff that we can't predict. We just can't know. And the amazing thing is, in fact, I had a teacher years ago, I'll conclude with this thought. I had a teacher years ago who said, if you want to see magic occur in any relationship where there used to be closeness, but now there's not, where there used to be love or affinity, and then something happened and it's estranged or it's soured or something's not the same. He said, if you want to see magic happen all the time, never fails, just do this one thing. And what it is it's doing the opposite of what we naturally do, instinctually do, which is we instinctually, if we've been close to somebody and there's estrangement, we instinctually blame them for everything that didn't work in the relationship and we take credit for all the stuff that did. And, of course, they're doing the same thing, so it's not a surprise that there's an estrangement. He said, do the opposite. He said, you communicate to them and you give them credit for everything that did or does work in the relationship. You take full responsibility for everything that didn't or doesn't work in the relationship and shut up. I learned that 12 years ago. I have done that dozens of times. I have never had it fail. It has always produced magic. We can be a blessing to people who haven't been 100% blessing to us by simply doing these little things. And if I were to die tonight, I think this is the message I would want to leave you, is knowing that God speaks through science. God is revealing divine truth through science, not just individually, personally, but also through science. We are the universe becoming conscious of itself, and we can be a life-changing blessing to others by simply expressing our gratitude and focusing on where others have been a blessing to us and just letting them know about it.